When the famous Danish physicist Niels Bohr gave two lectures at Harvard in October 1923, Robert made a point of attending both. Bohr had just won the Nobel the previous year for his investigations of the structure of atoms and of the radiation emanating from them. Oppenheimer would later say that it would be hard to exaggerate how much I venerate Bohr. Even on this occasion, his first glimpse of the man, he was deeply moved. Afterwards, Professor Bridgman noted that the impression he, Bohr, made on everyone who met him was a singularly pleasant one personally. I have seldom met a man with such evident singleness of purpose and so apparently free from guile. He is now idolized as a scientific god through most of Europe. Oppenheimer's approach to learning physics was eclectic, even haphazard. He focused on the most interesting, abstract problems in the field, bypassing the dreary basics. Years later, he confessed to feeling insecure about the gaps in his knowledge. To this day, he told an interviewer in 1963, I get panicky when I think about a smoke ring or elastic vibrations. There's nothing there, just a little skin over a hole. In the same way, my mathematical formation was, even for those days, very primitive. I took a course from J.E. Littlewood on number theory. Well, that was nice, but that wasn't really how to go about learning mathematics for the professional pursuit of physics. When Alfred North Whitehead arrived on campus, only Robert and one other undergraduate had the courage to sign up for a course with the philosopher and mathematician. They painstakingly worked their way through the three volumes of Principia Mathematica, co-authored by Whitehead and Bertrand Russell. I had a very exciting time, Oppenheimer recalled, reading the Principia with Whitehead, who had forgotten it, so that he was both teacher and student. Despite this experience, Oppenheimer always thought he was deficient in mathematics. I never did learn very much. I probably learned a good deal by a method that is never given enough credit, that is, by being with people. I should have learned more mathematics. I think I would have enjoyed it, but it was a part of my impatience that I was careless about it. But if there were gaps in his education, he could admit to his friend Paul Horgan that Harvard was good for him. In the autumn of 1923, Robert wrote Horgan a satirical letter in which he wrote about himself in the third person. Oppenheimer has grown to be quite a man now. You have no idea how Harvard has changed him. I am afraid it is not for the good of his soul to study so hard. He says the most terrible things. Only the other night I was arguing with him and I said, "But you believe in God, don't you?" And he said, "I believe in the second law of thermodynamics, in Hamilton's principle, in Bertrand Russell, and would you believe it? Siegfried Freud." Horgan thought Robert enthralling and charming. Horgan was himself a brilliant young man, and in the course of his long life he would eventually write 17 novels and 20 works of history, winning the Pulitzer Prize twice. But he would always regard Oppenheimer as a rare and invaluable polymath. "Leonardos and Oppenheimers are scarce," Horgan wrote in 1988. "But their wonderful love and projection of understanding as both private connoisseurs and historical achievers offers us at least an ideal to consider and measure by."